So ChatGPT has done a great thing for Synopsys, right? This announcement in the perspective of bringing awareness to people, right? Everywhere, like Carl was talking about, people talk about it. That's great, but sometimes it's overhyped, right? You know, they say they can do everything, anything and everything you want. You know? But the reality is, when I was at LSI Logic, this is like 20, 25 years ago, we had this moonshot thing, right? Uh-huh. Let us build this one button thing, not to go all the way, but at least to get the netlist. Take a behavioral language and then push a button and come. And of course, we were able to do it on examples, but in real life, even that time, it was hard, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now you're saying, well, you have this ChatGPT kind of technology. It should be possible, right? Because things are done. But reality is things are never static, right? You know, so many things change. And you talked about like the foundry specific and all those things. So that kind of goes to the question is, do you see the models becoming very supply chain specific?
Well, absolutely. Maybe because, you know, the whole notion of smart everything, you know, we coined, I want to say 2011 or something, the is now upon us. And already for a while, mm-hmm. by necessity on one hand, mm-hmm. meaning if you want to do optimizations or AI in a domain, you cannot do that on a general purpose computer because mm-hmm. it's too slow, mm-hmm. right? And so the first big step was actually GPUs. But it really brought the notion of multi-core, and multi-core can be simplified to certain tasks. Mm-hmm. And so the minute something is working in any of these verticals in AI, they say, this is great, we'll make it 100 times faster. There's no way to do that by saying, okay, we'll just go to the next transistor size. And so then the question is back, why don't you make your problem statement mm-hmm. narrower to mm-hmm. just what you need? And if you need you know, optimization for water networks, don't ask it at the same time to also do drug research and chip design while we're at it. And so there's a reason there's so many companies all developing the different types of AI chips, because they're all looking at market segments that are narrower. Mm-hmm. But that the positive of that is that while there's a continued technology push up, mm-hmm. there is a pull from the end markets economically mm-hmm. that therefore provides the money that if you can modify any vertical domain by just a couple percent, that's potentially of unbelievable value. Just think agriculture. If you could improve agriculture by 2%, we're talking many, many, many billion. And so narrowing thing is a way to get much higher speed. Broadening is to have more applications, but mm-hmm. if the applications don't work well, that's the same as having nothing. And that's why I think we will see a lot of this.
Now, so follow on to that question, from an EDA industry perspective, how do you see that impacted in the context of bigger companies? Right? We established that the bigger the company it is, I mean, obviously you have an advantage in terms of access to the supply chain, all those things, and you also have more people. But with this, do you see the industry being affected and the landscape changing? Because
ChatGPT or was AI?
But with AI in general, I mean.
Yeah, because ChatGPT is just one set of applications, and it's terrific what they do.
Right, right.
It's fun to watch, truly.
Well, my perspective is, until it kind of develops to the next stage. I mean, obviously, initially, when something is like zero, and then you come to one, right? People think, "Oh my God, there's such a huge,
like
right?
Millions."
Right, exactly. So people are saying it, but the reality is, when you put it to a specialist, right? For example, I've been playing around with it, and now Bard has come in. It gives you a jump start.
Yeah, and that is useful. But so does a random search on the internet on a word that you were saying. The problem is you get a whole bunch of websites, and then you have to search.
Right, you have to search it.
And so, to me, this is really a super search with, on top of that, a language formulation that is truly a synthesis and very user-friendly in that sense. But if you say, would you connect ChatGPT and say, my surgery robot, I'll just type in, fix the heart. There's something you need to know, seems
right.
to me.
Right.
Cannot say, well, we'll learn by cutting.
Right, right. Not on me.
This is great reinforcement learning. Patient dead, but operation succeed. so I think that there are many problems that can do well because they're not that deep, but they're very, very wide. And so I always felt that to me that that was so evident on the Go game. Because how many moves are there in Go? I think only one, put down stone. Is there any other move? I don't think so. And now, and there's how many locations? Well, whatever that, that board is, so that's sort of limited. But how many different combinations are? Well, that's sort of not very limited. And so that is a perfect characteristic of the type of problem, which is lots and lots and lots of stuff, but not requiring enormously deep assessment of other things. We are in the opposite. Mm-hmm. So you move one rectangle on a layout, that bus no longer can't quite make it. That pushes other stuff, which creates a delay there that wasn't expected. And there you have to... Everything is connected in a way that has very complex ramification. But what is really complex is to assess the ramification. Mm-hmm. So by moving that one rectangle, did I change the timing? Did I change the timing under certain temperature? That is very difficult to keep track of. And so I consider what we have done is to take the, this powerful understanding of AI, but applied it to a way, way, way more powerful machine, which is our entire EDA suite of 30 plus years, of 36 years of experience on the most complex chips in the world. So the learning, most of the learning is actually in that pyramid underneath that's underwater. You see the AI, and the AI says, got it, I got ding, 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 ding. There is a solution, right?
Right.
Looks great. Mm-hmm. And underneath, it uses so many capabilities that are strictly domain specific. You know, I mean, our assessment move that rectangle does not help in is the patient still alive? Had nothing to do. So the learning itself is entirely domain specific.
Now the learning obviously is going to happen faster and faster, right? The example, the analogy I will use is like when I saw this skyscraper scaffolding that is self-building, right? Because first time I saw how do they get it up there, right?
How do they get the crane off is my question.
Right. Right?
Yeah, yeah,
so then I looked into it, and it's self-building, right? So you put one thing, and then it kind of builds on itself, and within a few minutes, it's all up 300 feet above the air. So with the AI, right, obviously, it has to self-learn, and the expectation is that the learnings will happen faster and faster, right?
Yeah.
Now, taking the SaaS delivery mechanism that people are used to in most industries, and the expectation is that, you know, in the old days, it used to be like, you know, one release every 6 months, you'd be happy, right? But then it became like, you know, on an ongoing basis. And I talked to VMware people, they say, on a day-to-day basis, if you take an average, there's two releases per day. That is how fast it's happening. So do you see customers putting more demand on Synopsys and other companies to say, hey, you know, as soon as you learn something, push it to me?
This is very interesting, good question, because for many, many years, I've argued that most of our customers are race car drivers, and we provide them with the race car. And so when we roll out a race car and say, hey, you know, this thing is actually 20% faster, you think, well, I'm going to win everything. Mm-hmm. But the brakes don't work quite. You know what they say? Give it to me.
Give it to me anyway. Either I win or die.
but then they don't put it in production until they know the brakes work, because it's too expensive to have a car crash, but it is too exciting to win the race. Mm-hmm. And so they're always in between those two things. And what's been interesting, we of course have learned over the years how to make more and more sure that what we deliver actually works well. They have raced forward with us, and you know, this is why citing the numbers of that design in early 2020, late 2019, the first one, and now having 160 commercial tape outs is like, that is unbelievably fast for this level of sophistication.
Let me take these advances we talked about and say, okay, now that we have this technology, can we kind of get better solutions from older technologies, process nodes, for example, right? That's always like, in the old days, it was all manual. And maybe I never found the best solution. Now I have this technology, I can apply it to a 180 nanometer node, and maybe I squeeze more out of it, and it doesn't cost me much. Has anybody asked you that question, and what do you think about that?
Well, you know, in many ways, most of our tools have always done that. So the new versions while being driven entirely by the most advanced users, have benefited everybody else once they upgrade to that version. Now, sometimes there's things in the version that, the technology doesn't support, but for all the things that existed before, they're backward compatible. And so, yes, we get people that do re-optimizations. Mm-hmm. In general, though, people like to not redo the chip. You know, that's their ROI is determined by the work they put in. They just like to sell more. But you're still raising a very interesting point from another angle if you put that together, which is that with multi-die, the whole question is we don't have to be all at the same node. And certain things are virtually impossible to put on the same silicon. So compute and memory is just, it's never going to be optimal. But now the question is, you still put some memory on it called cache because you need it to be fast, right?
Right?
And then the question is, how much do you put in proximity and a little further away and a little further away? That is all changing. And so I think that these repartitionings of what goes where actually beg the very question you have. Well, so why don't we use 16 nanometer technology, well-established, well-honed, high-yield, you name it, because it's fast enough, but no, still optimize the hell out of it.
And this goes to your point about the SysMore thing you introduced, which is everybody has to rethink. Now, maybe somebody was thinking for this just the compute, right? I'm going here, but the optimization or maximization nowadays, at least people have to start thinking at the system level. It's not so much just one die giving it to you,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And so that begs the question, can somebody make a more economical solution by rethinking an older solution and taking it and making it run faster?
And, you know, that's what our field has done for a lifetime. They always rethink, because fundamentally, there's only so many compute formalism. But they are being rethought and rethought and re-architected and changed. And now you suddenly have a new vocabulary. And you can now build with the thought in mind of multiple chips in super high proximity, maybe even right on top of each other, others accessible through interposer. And that forces a rethink of the top-down architecture. And, you know, the term architect has always been dear to my heart because if you look in history, really great architects are actually amazing people because they have this vision of how things are going to work together. They understand the fundamental functionality that certain things can only flow in some way, otherwise it doesn't work. Be an opera, be it your private house, there are certain flows. But really great architects that build these massive things, they know exactly, if you ask them, what's the weight of a brick? How much weight can that brick carry? They know the transistor, in other words. And I think in our field, this is exactly the same. People that are at the very top in making the decisions need to have an understanding of, if I take this technology, how does the techonomics change? I can get 30% more speed, but how much more cost will it be? And now you have to make a techonomic decision, right?
So that goes to one of the slides you mentioned, Synopsys is supporting 300-odd processes, right? 340 or something like that. That is an amazing number, right? You take from beginning to today. And so here is a business question for you, is that does it make sense to look at it and say, okay, you know, where does bulk of the designs that have been done in the past and being done in the past, right, where will they get bucketed? And build your Synopsys AI solutions to address
the different categories.
Different categories.
It's a very good question. And so what we need to assess is what are really the economics of doing that. I think if it becomes more commonplace that people build multi-die and quickly decide, okay, I'm going to put some things on older nodes, your point is going to be more valid. Right now, invariably, and this has always been true, that the most advanced technologies get advanced by the most advanced companies. And so it's the frontier that drives things, but the masses, so to speak, follow later. And so that doesn't mean we go backwards with our technology to apply it. No. It just is built so that it would apply in the first place.
Thanks for your answers. And the questions had been bothering me, so I got a chance to ask you. That's good.
From the source.